It is always a beauty to have you here on the Pulse here on Joy News. We are live around the world at myjoyonline.com. Now, in a bid to address the present power supply challenges and financial strains placed in Ghana's energy sector, Finance Minister Dr. Mohamed Amin Adam has announced a series of reforms, key amongst them mandating the Electricity Company of Ghana to consolidate all revenue collections into a single account. The ECG currently operates 61 bank accounts. That's according to the PRC. Upon initial assessment of 36 accounts, reveals substantial discrepancies in the ECG's financial reporting. Dr. Amin will describe the current outages as disturbing, and streamlining the financial operations in the sector would help deal with the financial challenges plaguing the sector. We'll hear from him shortly. But first, let's bring you today's episode of our Doomsday Diaries, which puts the spotlight on the milling industry, which is responsible for processing some of our favorite staple foods, but has begun to suffer setback due to intermittent power cuts.
Seated alone in his milling shop, Samson waits on ECG to restore the light that was taken several hours ago. This has become a regular occurrence at Asufa, near Ofanko Barrier in the Greater Accra region and other parts of the country. Lights go off at unexpected times, with no one knowing when it will be restored. Samson mills corn, tomatoes and kenke. His customers come to his shop as early as 4 a.m., and that's usually the period the lights go off the most.
Because it's a money thing. They have to come and grind and then go and make sure that they prepare for their children for school. So that's how they come early. So when they come and then the light is off, it's worry them.
So what do? They take it back?
They go back and leave their container here or their rubbers here for the next day. That means that day, they will not work. So what the work they did yesterday, that's what they have to depend on today. So that means that your life is going back. So this light off, something has to be done about it.
The location of Samson's shop means he does not attract as many customers as he would have wished. It tells me that majority of the milling shops are located at market centers, and people prefer sending the items there to bringing it where he is. That, coupled with Dumso, is taking a toll on his business.
And you know sometimes when it's the lights go off and then they bring it back and it is low current, it affects our machines. If you're not careful, this motor can just bend. And it's going to take you about 2,000 plus before you rewind it. And it's not going to be an easy thing. And I would like the government to be sincere to the country that this is what's going on. Because you have various problems already that cannot be solved. We are just there. Like, we are not in our country. So we would like them to be sincere. Tell us what is going on. What they want to do with our life. Because this is our life. Without work, what are you living for?
When customers bring their dry meals to Samson's shop for mailing, or Samson buys one himself for the same purpose and there is no power, they leave it in his care, in anticipation that the light will be restored by the time they return. But that is not always the case. This often results in the items going bad due to how delicate and tender they are. The customers lose money, and so does Samson.
Sometimes when you go and buy the kenke for the ice kenke, and then the customers come and buy, and then unfortunately the light is off, and they go back. That means that the next day you cannot use the kenke again. It will spoil, so you have to go and buy another one. So that means that money is just gone. You will not get anything at the end of the day. So, and then the maize too, the corn too, when you soak it, let's say 3 days, and then unfortunately the light is off, you realize that though you can grind it and then get it, but you cannot get the quantity that you want because it will reduce. It is too much soaked, so it will reduce the quantity that you are expecting. So that means that whatever you're supposed to get out of it, or let's assume that maybe if you sell it, you get like 200 Ghana cedis, it may reduce to 100 Ghana cedis or 150.
Asufa and its surrounding communities are known for experiencing erratic power outages, popularly known as Dumso. This was evident when the news team arrived in the community at around 2 in the afternoon. The lights were off and had been so since the dawn of that day. Their plea for a Dumsor timetable seems to have fallen on deaf ears. For Joy News, Kenneth Jesse.
So what is government's solution to address the challenge that we face today? We can hear from the finance minister, Dr. Mohamed Aminu Adam, who has been revealing a series of reforms plaguing the energy sector. He spoke at a news conference in Washington, D.C. on the sidelines of the IMF World Bank Spring meeting.
The energy sector continues to be our Achilles heel. And the current outages is quite disturbing. We are not happy about it ourselves. But the problems in the energy sector have accumulated for years. We have addressed some of these challenges, but some of them are also emerging that needs immediate attention. And so under the leadership of His Excellency the President, we have agreed to a number of measures that we have started implementing. And in due course, very, very soon, the people of Ghana will see the results of these interventions. Particularly, the cash waterfall mechanism, which faced some challenges, is being repositioned to deliver and to achieve its objective. The revenue collection by ECG really has improved, but we haven't gotten to where we want to get to. We want ECG to collect, to populate the cash waterfall mechanism to the levels that can provide cash flow to all the other SOEs in the value chain. And that can also pay for fuel, and that can pay for the power IPPs are providing. We are almost there, and very soon the people of Ghana will see the results. To bring accountability and transparency to bear on the cash waterfall mechanism, we have started auditing the cash waterfall, and we are also required to publish the findings from the audit. We've already done one audit. And we've published the findings. We are going to continue to do that so that we can bring transparency and accountability so that all revenues meant for the cash waterfall goes to the cash waterfall for the purpose for which it was created. We've also established a single collection account. Therefore, ECG will not collect revenue through the many accounts that they operate. Everything will come through a single collection account. So it is easier for all of us to track.
Right, so that's our finance minister, Dr. Mohamed Aminu Adam, who is currently in the United States of America, Washington. He participated in the IMF World Bank Spring meeting, and after the meeting, he held a news conference to announce some key measures that they've adopted going forward to address the current issues with energy supply in the country. Now, let's get more on this. Joining me via Zoom is a ranking member of the Mines and Energy Committee, John Jinapor, and John is very versed in this area. Mr. Jinapor, it's a pleasure to have you here on the Pulse. If you can unmute for me, sir.
I have. I'm surprised you can't hear me. I've unmuted.
Yes, sir. I can hear you loud and clear now. So I'm just reading some headlines of news portal. Dumsor contributed to our defeat at Accra House of Football. There's a pastor, Reverend Kofi Duor, who said he has to sleep on benches in front of his church because he couldn't just contain the heat in his room. So it is affecting everybody. Let me pick your initial reaction to what we are experiencing over the weekend. I endured it every night from 8 a.m. sometimes to 4 a.m., sometimes to 5 a.m., 6 a.m., and there was no communication whatsoever to prepare me for what was to happen. Generally, what is your general assessment of the current state of electricity in this country?
Yeah, thank you very much. First of all, there's a deficit in generation. There's a deficit of about 500 megawatts between the peak demand and what the telcos are able to generate. And so clearly, there's a generation deficit. And so no matter what you do, the power is just not enough to meet the demand requirement. Therefore, GridCo is compelled to take out some transformers in order that the system does not suffer a total collapse. And so clearly, what is officially known as load shedding has been taking place since January. It's otherwise known as Junso in our local collapse. I've just listened to the finance minister, and I'm very alarmed. First of all, the Minister of Finance cannot claim that they have no knowledge of total ECG collections. The problem is not ECG collections. The problem is that there's a deficit in terms of the money ECG collects and the ability to meet the entire value chain financial requirement. The Minister of Finance himself is supposed to pay about 200 million CDs every month.
Yes.
Since August, they failed to pay that money. And so you have failed to pay that money. And you are turning around to blame ECG. I find that very, very unfortunate. Look, the solution is simple.
Right.
The government must find some money for the generation companies to buy fuel. That's all. There's nothing else. Look, let no one deceive you with any other explanation. The only problem currently being faced is inadequate fuel supply arising from financial challenges in procuring fuel. The plants are available. The plants are ready to work. All government needs to do is to get fuel. This week, for instance, GridCo has projected that there will be a daily load shedding of about 500 megawatts.
500 megawatts.
Are aware. 500 megawatts. They are aware. And so they are ready and willing to provide a timetable. But MPP politicians, government officials, have instructed them not to issue the timetable. PURC has directed ECG to issue a load shedding timetable. The Mines and Energy Committee of Parliament, with all its powers, has directed ECG and GridCo to issue a timetable. What is holding it is that the executive has moved into a situation of self-denial because of petty politics. They do not want to release the timetable so that Ghanaians can plan their lives. And so the whole problem is not really ECG. It's not GridCo. They are willing to issue the timetable. They have no problem doing so. But because of the political backlash, and because we're in an election year, there's an intransigent attempt by government to deny the obvious. And you yourself, you can attest that MPP communicators keep denying that there's no load shedding. When GridCo has confirmed in a letter, when ECG has now confirmed that the load shedding is not from their transformers, but due to inadequate supply of power.
But JJ,
PURC.
But JJ, on that point,
PURC.
Yes. Doesn't that come as total insult to the intelligence of Ghanaians? We are experiencing it. Just vocalize it and it become an issue.
Not just an insult. They think that we are dumb. Look, all these bodies appeared before the Mines and Energy Committee. And all of them admitted that there's a generation deficit. And that this load shedding is because generation is unable to meet demand. And that the cause of this load shedding is fuel. It's documented. It's documented. The ministry was there. PURC, Energy Commission, GridCo, ECG. We brought all of them at the same table. And the truth came to bear. And the chairman, who is an MPP member, directed that given that you are not sure of an immediate solution, publish a timetable backed by all the members of the committee. We adopted that resolution. And yet they have refused. And they've refused because they know we cannot sack them. And that if we want to take them through parliamentary processes, it will take a very long time. Don't you believe that if the president or the minister had directed them to do the right thing, this timetable wouldn't be out.
Right.
You're just playing politics with this.
Let me pick the issues one by one. You said you started with the financial constraints facing ECG, making it practically impossible to procure fuel. ECG, they've been in this collection business. I pay my bill through prepaid. I don't owe them. Why is it so difficult for them to raise the finances to procure the fuel?
Because first of all, government officials are not paying. The hospitals, the police, the military, when they consume, ECG has to submit the bill to the Ministry of Finance. And like the Minister of Finance said, because of the IMF conditionalities, POC is now compelled to publish their findings of the cash waterfall mechanism.
Mm.
And if you read the report, from August to date, government has accumulated about 1.6 billion and has not paid. Government also directed ECG through the Ministry of Finance on the instructions of Mr. Kenneth for ECG to procure some fuels in 2023. That debt has not been paid. And so the debt is compounded. And now fuel suppliers are unwilling to supply fuel to Ghana because they do not find us credit worthy. Look, my brother, before God, this is the reason. And I tell you in all sincerity, devoid of the politics, if this government can find money and procure fuel, this load shedding will be over in a twinkle of an eye.
My understanding is that the cash waterfall mechanism was, you know, an antidote to this. Now we've been told by ECG that it is not subject to any regulatory output in the value chain. We take the view that the CSM is not subject to any regulatory oversight. The PLC at best can only consider this mechanism in arriving at the tariff ECG is allowed to oversight, meaning that they are not under any obligation to meet the dictates of what this mechanism was put in place to address.
Even if they meet the dictates of this mechanism, we'll still have load shedding. There will be no fuel to money to buy fuel. That's the whole basic thing. You collect about 800 million, that money is not enough. Because your currency has depreciated so much so that what you collect when you convert it to dollars, there's a huge shortfall. So the challenge is not the cash flow water mechanism. And let nobody deceive Ghanaians. The cash waterfall mechanism only ensures that whatever you collect early.
I think we are losing you, Mr. Jinapo. The connection to you is beginning to act up. We'll see if we can bring him back on so we can deal with some few other issues before we let him go. So Mr. John Jinapo is the ranking member on the Mines and Energy Committee. We are having connections with issues with him. We'll try and rectify it, and then still have some few questions that we want to ask him regarding the public spat between the PLC and the ECG and the way forward. Now we are picking information that government may be, you know, attempting to establish some line of supply with a company that is outside of the country in the Middle East for direct supply of fuel to the country to power these plants. We want to find out whether this is feasible. And going forward, if there's no timetable, what more can be done to deal with this matter as we find an antidote for this rather disturbing development in our country. And like the Minister for Finance says, government is unhappy. Government find it rather unfortunate that the situation is what it is today. And if you are feeling it is because, according to him, the GridCo have made it clear that going forward, they will be sharing 500 megawatts of power every day. Mr. Jinapo, we lost you briefly. So I was saying, from where you sit, what really is the way forward? Now, we are picking information that the government is attempting to negotiate for the rest supply of fuel from a country in the Middle East. I don't know what to make of it. This is an emergency situation that they are trying to resolve. Will this work, and how should they approach this?
Well, it's good news to hear that government is trying to get some fuel. And it also buttresses the point that the real challenge is fuel, as we've always been saying. And any other attempt to deny this reality would be most unfortunate. I do not know which country. I do not know the terms and conditions. But I would strongly object to a situation where they would go and buy fuel on credit just to hold the election year and pile up the debt. So let me send a signal to all these countries, foreign entities, that first of all, if you are entering into an international transaction with Ghana, under the Constitution, 181, you need parliamentary approval. Secondly, if you do not follow the procurement processes and ensure that you get the necessary approvals, and you move into a haste and conclude fuel supplies with government outside the known rules and regulations, when President Mahama assumes office, we will not honor that. We will not honor any illegality, will not honor any breach and any attempt to use unorthodox means just to hold the system through palliative measures because of elections, only to pile up debt for President Mahama to come and pay. Already, we have an outstanding debt of about $1.8 billion. When we assume office, that's what we'll be dealing with. We would no longer tolerate these underhand dealings that culminates in substantial debt overhang for the country.
But in all of this cycle of, you know, issues and denial, is this public spat between the ECG and the PRLs? The PRLs are seeking to exercise its regulatory functions. What do you make of what is happening between the PRLC and the ECG?
Because of politics, that's all. I mean, but for politics, when the regulator issues a directive, you follow it. If you disagree, you go to court. But clearly you can tell that there's some political underhand dealings. And so ECG is being used as a front. Because in all this, apart from the minister telling us to go and publish our own timetable if we are fed up with the load shedding, and I haven't heard any concrete measures from the Ministry of Energy. I thought that by now, the Ministry of Energy should engage Ghanaians, tell us the real problem, the challenges we are facing, its consequence, and the steps being taken to deal with the challenges. Don't you think this is a fair call? I mean, this is a fair call from Ghanaians.
It is, and the Ministry has been totally silent on this matter.
I find that very, very strange. And the President is comfortable with that. The President who swore an oath to save the people is comfortable with that. The Vice President who is seeking to be President and currently head of the economic management team cannot show leadership. That managing the economy is also about providing reliable supply of power, and that he is the head of the economic management team, and that he should demonstrate leadership so that Ghanaians may even see that, look, this man is capable of managing the economy. He's also gone mute. He hasn't shown any leadership. We need fuel. This is a critical moment where he must demonstrate his economic prowess and intellectual capability. This is what we call leadership.
And in the absence of the fuel, the plant that was recently installed in Kumasi becomes useless.
Absolutely. And even that one, I have a major problem there. And I intend to activate all the necessary measures in Parliament. How much is that fuel being supplied for? How is that fuel passed through in the determination of the final tariff? And is the tariff from that plant enough to meet the value chain analysis in terms of the cost structure? It's another thing I intend to pursue when Parliament resumes. But now that we are facing load shedding, all our efforts is on how we can push government to do the needful. Government can procure this fuel if they prioritize. Look, it's a matter of priority. If they see this challenge as a priority, they will deal with it. But they believe that they can just explain and spin around or remain silent, and that Ghanaians would only complain and sit down. Meanwhile, people's businesses are collapsing. Nobody wants load shedding. Look, nobody wants the power off. But if we're having challenges, let's do the needful, accept that there are challenges, agree on the root cause of the challenge so that together we can find a solution to deal with that challenge. That is the only option out for me.
And I believe that's exactly the road the PRC embarked on when they made some demands on the ECG. Now, when the ECG had the opportunity to respond to the demands made by PRC, they decided to punch legal holes in what they describe as PRC failure to follow the natural rules of justice. And for that reason, they were not in a position to respond to most of the issues that PRC demanded. Some are saying that ECG lost an opportunity to explain to Ghanaians what has happened and possibly apologize to carry the people along in these very challenging times.
But what is the coordinating ministry doing? I mean, that is my worry. There's a coordinating ministry. There's a supervising ministry. There is a supervising agency in parliament. Look at what we did. Even if you criticize us, we tried our best. Brought all of them together. What prevents the minister from inviting PURC, ECG, GRIDCO, and all these agencies to one meeting and finding the solution? Or at least determining the real cause of the problem? Look, this thing is just a gimmick. It's just a gimmick aimed at throwing dust into our eyes. Engage ECG in a PURC in an unnecessary public banter. Engage in blame games. Use shenanigans and legal loopholes to entangle each other while the ordinary Ghanaian suffers. What you and I want is power. It's electricity, not legal gymnastics. And I commend the PRC. And the PRC, they've demonstrated in these very difficult times that indeed they are interested in serving Ghanaians.
All right. Is the committee work done? I know that your last meeting, you are now waiting for the House to come back so they can put your report before the plenary. In view of all the developments that has happened after your meeting, would you be interested in opening it up again? Or you are just going to wait for Parliament to convey and then you can report to the plenary the outcome of your engagement?
The committee is done with its initial work. Okay. We've put it together. I've read the draft report. I find it very, very concise. And I commend the chairman for a very good work done, as well as all the members. But like you said, the report has to be presented to plenary. And so we are waiting for Parliament to resume. We shall present the report. And it is our hope that the House will adopt that report and consequential orders will be given. Once those orders are given at plenary and they defy it, that's another matter altogether. But for me, we are human beings. We need not get to this level. Look, it's not everything that you just use legal processes to resolve. Sometimes common sense, thinking, and doing the right thing resolve some of these issues. If you tell Ghanaians that indeed we have a problem and we're doing everything to resolve, they may not be happy, but at least they will find you credible and honest. But if you think we are all done, and that you can dribble us, you can spin, you can throw dust into our eyes and hope that some way, somehow, your communicators will defend you after all. Anyway, we are all Ghanaians and we are all suffering the current power challenges.
Right, thank you very much, Mr. John Jinapor, as ranking member on the Mines and Energy Committee. That committee has been very much involved in addressing this matter from their own point of view. But clearly, like you said, you will have to now wait for the for Parliament to come out so that they can put their report before them. This is a pause here on Joy News. We'll take a short break. So we are back here on the pause. Now, let's move from energy to general economic issues, because Finance Minister Dr. Mohamed Amin Adam has revealed that the country's bilateral creditors have shared a draft memorandum of understanding on final terms for restructuring Ghana's debts. The development could now pave the way for the IMF board to disburse some $360 million to Ghana in June. The finance minister gave more details on this agreement at a news conference in Washington, D.C.
I have to tell you that I'm very optimistic that we will reach a very durable agreement that will help reset our debt profile. As far as the bilateral creditors are concerned, you know that we reached an agreement in principle in January, but we had to now formalize the agreement through an MOU with our bilateral creditors as a group, what we call the OCC. And the indication we have is that the OCC has shared the draft MOU with their members, and they are about sharing the draft with us sooner than later. And so as soon as we get the draft and we are fine with it, that will mean we have an agreement on the MOU. The IMF is not asking for a deal with the bilateral creditors, but an agreement on the wording of the MOU, and that will be sufficient for the IMF to go to the board, because that would have signaled the financing assurances that we need from the OCC members. The issue in relation to Eurobonds is also on course. We, as you know, from the cleansing statement we issued at the end of our non-disclosure agreement, we reached an interim agreement which we had to subject to the IMF threshold. And when you subjected that to the IMF threshold, you will notice that we narrowed the gap between what we agreed in the interim with the bondholders and the IMF threshold. We narrowed the gap, very, very slight difference. But that means that there is more work to be done, because any deal that we reach will have to be consistent with the threshold, the DSA threshold of 55% debt to GDP in present value terms, and then also a debt service to revenue ratio of about 18%.
All right, so let me take you live to Washington, D.C. now, and George Uyafe with our business desk joins me via Zoom. So, George, it's good to see you from D.C. And, I mean, let's break it down for the understanding of those who are watching us. There is a bilateral creditors and a zero bond. Can you differentiate between the two so that we can set the ball rolling on this matter?
So, Elton, some would say that why are we here as a country, right? Ghana? The IMF and the World Bank, after classifying the country, that they do what they call the debt sustainability analysis, give us that tag that our debts have gotten to levels that can be said to be unsustainable. It means that when you look at those seven main indicators, we are struggling, or we could struggle, to settle our debts on time. Mm-hmm. So as part of this whole IMF agreement, which that avenue was reserved for least developed countries, or those who are struggling to settle their debts, Ghana subscribed for the debt suspension initiative through the G20 common framework, where we have these developed countries and also these developed countries that are part of the Paris Club, that give me some breathing space so that I can rework on how to settle your debt. Elton, after the HIPC initiatives, it appears that no developed country is now committed to cancellation of debt.
Right.
So what we would do with you as a developing country or a low middle income country is that come and engage us, and let's review the terms in which you can settle the debt. So when it comes to the classification that you are asking about, these are bilateral, these are countries, for instance, Ghana, UK, Ghana, Japan, maybe Ghana, maybe China. These can be classified as Ghana and the other developed countries that we are indebted to them. This is based on loans granted. This is based on some facilities that they are actually financing here in the country. Mm. And that is why we can look at, and even some of the multilateral institutions. And if you put all this debt together, if you quantify it, it's about $5.4 billion.
And George, this is for the bilateral creditors?
Yes. So, for instance, Ghana, China, maybe Ghana, France, Ghana, Holland. These are those creditors that have been put into one category that can be classified as the bilateral creditors. Now, don't forget that when the country was classified as a low middle income country, those soft facilities that were coming to us was kind of reduced. Mm. So Ghana went onto the commercial market to borrow. These are classified as the commercial creditors or the private creditors. And these are other facilities that were negotiated purely on market conditions. Mm. Now, if you put that debt together, we're looking at a little over $13.4 billion.
Plus the $5 billion already, or the $5 billion inclusive?
No, that is, this are, we are separating the debts here. So the $5.4 billion is to the bilateral creditors. Right. Now, if you come to the commercial creditors or the Eurobond holders, as I was trying to explain, that could be about $13.4 billion.
So we're looking at almost $19 billion.
$13.4 billion, yeah, for the commercial creditors, yeah. Mm. So these are two categories of debts that Ghana needs to go back to them under the framework that the IMF and the World Bank has established, where you call the G20 Common Framework, to engage these bilateral creditors and then also engage these commercial creditors. And so that is just a brief background in terms of letting our viewers appreciate who are these bilateral creditors and who are these commercial creditors.
Absolutely.
Eurobond holders, the commercial market operators, these can be classified as the commercial or private bond holders owing them about $13.4 billion.
Are you privy to the details of the MOU signed between Ghana and these creditors?
So with respect to the bilateral creditors, and they, again, let me take you back. Somewhere in January, they had what they called the agreement in principle that they are open to talks that will lead to restructuring of the debt. And that agreement in principle is what Ghana took to the IMF for us to get even that first tranche of disbursement. It appears that a lot of things have happened. Now, we also understand that somewhere in the February, government was able to kind of move very fast when it comes to the terms of, or even the wording of how the agreement should be structured.
Mm.
Now, fast forward, based on what the finance minister said yesterday, they have been able to reach an agreement on the wording. So, for instance, listen, you owe these bilateral creditors about $5.4 billion. How are you going to work to pay the debts when it comes to the interest suspension, the principal? Are you going to give them any haircuts? What are the legal terms? All these things, Elton, has to be finalized in terms of the wording and the legal implications for all the members to agree to it. And it appears that now we have that text,
right,
and it's being shared among all its members. And based on what the minister said was that, listen, from where we've gotten to, it appears that, listen, we are already agreeing on the terms. So for every member to agree that they are okay, then we can classify, we can say that we have been able to reach an agreement to these bilateral credits when it comes to the MOU. And we can tell the IMF that, listen, we are done with the agreement. Take the document and go to your board for that $360 million to be advanced to Ghana under the second program completion under the fund program.
I'm more interested in the commitment of the creditors and their commitment to respect the terms of the agreement reached as far as this MOU is concerned. I'm asking because this is not the first time we heard about commitment and the fact that we are getting closer to reaching a deal. But we've been on this road for years.
Elton, you owe people for leaving the bilateral creditors about over $1 billion.
Mm.
Now, every economy is going through challenges. So most of them have ruled out this whole idea about debt cancellation.
Mm.
So listen, it's rigorous, but some will even say that if you compare us to Zambia, it appears Ghana's process has been very, very fast and very, very smooth compared to the struggles that Zambia went through. So it is about all these things. And China has not been on this road where they have to cancel or even restructure debts and all the rest. And don't forget, Elton, when they even agree these terms to you, they have to go back to their parliament to agree on all those things. Now, take a typical example even in Ghana. When agreements have to go through parliament, the scrutiny and all those things. So that could be the reason why it has delayed. And that is why even a wording like S, it has to be scrutinized so that every member is okay with it. So if what the minister is saying, from what we have picked up from even the official creditor committee, Elton, it appears that we have come very, very far and moved smoothly. That in percentage terms, you could look at about 90% through. Because from what the minister is saying, that it appears that it is just about the wedding, the legal technologies. And for them, based on the agreement in principle reached, he doesn't think that it will be that late for us to have that agreement in place to let the IMF then go to their board and say that at the staff level, Ghana passed the second review. At the board level, everything that you wanted, Ghana has done it. So I approve the second review and then disperse on the money. But Elton, for a lot of people, it's not just about the money that is coming in. It is also about the fact that if this agreement is closed, then countries like China, countries like maybe France, UK, they can now go on to disperse fresh money to us. There are a lot of projects out there in Ghana that has stalled because of the disagreement in finalizing this deal.
Yes.
And also the signal that it will also give to other development partners that were not indebted to us, that Ghana didn't owe them money. So it is not just about the IMF money, but also how this could now open the doors for fresh disbursements and projects that have actually stalled for them to resume in time. And for those independent observers, that is what they could be looking at or looking at in terms of what this would mean for the broader Ghanaian economy.
All right, George, thank you very much for this explanation this afternoon here on The Pulse. And I'm guessing that in the hours to come, we'll have more discussion on this very matter. The deadline they've given is June, and the expectation is that by June, over $360 million will hit Bank of Ghana's account so that the program can take the life of its own. George Yuafe is a business editor here with Joy News. And he's still in D.C. Participating in the IMF World Bank Spring Meeting. Kofi Ajay is with our data and research desk, and he also joins me in the studio. So, Kofi, let me ask you, I mean, beyond the diplomatic words, are you confident that we'll secure this?
Well, I mean, if you look at what is involved, it's not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not just word of mouth. You need to do a lot of work. And as you listen to Selassie yesterday,
right,
he said that it's a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that it's impossible. We can do it as a country. And if you listen to George as well, most of the talks are now advanced, and Ghana is in a very, very good position to now get the debt rework done. But with the bilateral creditors, I mean, we understand we got the agreement in principle way back January.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the most important thing now we need to get is to make sure that the various parties under the creditor committee feel safe. Feeling safe means that they must have that sense of comparability of treatment where nobody will feel cheated. One of the creditors feels that, I mean, the terms are not really favorable to me, it becomes a little bit problematic. Mm-hmm. That is why the finance ministry in January said that, well, we have the agreement in principle.
Right.
But right now, we need to sign the MOUs with each of the member countries. And that's why they are sharing, the MOUs mm-hmm. with themselves. Everybody is taking a look and see if, I mean, that sort of comparability of treatment is there so that nobody feels cheated. And I believe that once the various creditors who are involved in terms of the bilateral mm-hmm. are okay with the comparability of treatment, Ghana will have the go-ahead or we can start signing the paperwork. On the side of the commercial, it's a bit complex in the sense that, I mean, the amount involved is huge.
Right.
And the monies involved are not just ordinary monies. These are hedge funds and other people's pension monies.
Right.
They wouldn't just let it go like that. And the fact that this is a part of the external restructuring where we are seeking haircuts, it means that a portion of that debt must be written off. That's the initial proposal. Mm-hmm. And the first proposal that we reached, it looks as if the magnitude of haircuts we got from the restructuring was not enough to meet the IMF program parameters. It means that...
What was our proposal?
Well, our proposal is that on the side of the principal, we are looking for up to 40% haircut on the principal. It means that every $100 that you owe me, I need about 40% of $40 off.
Total cancellation.
Not total cancellation.
To pay
40%
right
off. Mm-hmm. Then you have on the interest, we're looking for up to 5% haircut on the interest. Mm-hmm. It means that if the interest rate or the coupon rate or the, on the amount that I borrowed or the bond is around, let's say, the average is around 9% or 10%, mm-hmm. it means that you have to reduce the interest for me and also reduce the amount, the principal involved. Mm-hmm. On the side of the bilateral, we are getting moratorium. It means that a breathing space for a while, then you
before we pay back.
You pay the correct amount or the original amount. There's no reduction in the coupon or in the principal.
Okay.
But on the side of the commercial, we are treating it differently. That's why it's a bit technical. Because, I mean, Ghana is not the only country at the doorsteps of the commercial creditors seeking for restructuring. Other countries are watching what the credit, the external, the commercial creditors would do for Ghana.
And they can take a cue from that.
Absolutely. That's why they are a bit careful and the non-disclosure agreement and all of those things. But I can say that Ghana is currently in a very good position and we are all anticipating that by May we should be able to get all the necessary financing assurance, especially from the bilateral creditors. And just like you heard Amin Adam, we do not need a deal. I mean, a deal is, you can explain it, but I mean, once you sign the MOUs, mm-hmm. you can also say that that's also a deal. I mean, because that will give you the wording, the magnitude of haircut or the magnitude of, you know, relief that you are going to get. Because what you're looking for is $5.4 billion relief from the bilateral. In total, we are hoping to cut about $10.5 billion of our external debt is now more than $30 billion.
Right. My understanding is that the IMF is bent on we getting a good deal because they don't want a situation where they release the money go to pay your.
Pulling up to Mickey D's just for drinks? Oh yeah, that's me. Nothing extra, just perfection and a straw. Coming in hot for the coldest cups on the block. Because there are drinks. Then there are drinks from McDonald's.
Ever combine an ice-cold frozen Coke with piping hot fries? Try frozen drinks any size for $1.49. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At Strayer University, we've been empowering students to pursue their goals for over 130 years. From innovative degree programs and helpful tools to campus locations focused on creating community for international students, we can help you find your way forward. We even offer international students 25% off tuition on select degree programs. Visit Strayer.edu to learn more. Eligibility rules, restrictions, and exclusions apply. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV and has many campuses, including at 2121 15th Street North in Arlington, Virginia.
Creditors.
I mean, but for the debt restructuring, this year we should be paying about $5 billion
in interest alone.
Interest alone, both external and then domestic. So it tells you that, it tells you the amount of money we pump into paying, you know, servicing our debt. That's why the IMF needs that breathing space for us so that we can invest that money into other, you know,
areas.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and this is also an election year. So,
of course, I was coming about spending.
Yeah.
About spending and how we are able to stay within budgetary limits. Already, Minister of Rules is promising across the country what is that they will be doing. And this all these promises require financial backing to see them through. Mm-hmm. Other ministries have programs and projects that they need to implement. All of them require money.
Yeah.
And yet you are in a very bad financial situation. Which is that every city you spend, you must be able to account for it. And that makes the situation bad.
Yeah, I mean,
and the trust issue also comes.
Yeah, very important. I mean, once you enter into an IMF program, it is so difficult to take unilateral decisions because everything has to be discussed with the fund and must be in line with the program parameters. Remember that when fuel prices started going up, NPA came in to withdraw the price stabilization recovery levy. They had to reinstate it because under the program, you've agreed that you're not going to, you know, dish out subsidies to the energy sector. And you know, fuel prices falls under the energy sector. So going into the election year, I mean, government has promised, we have in place now the 0% financing that the Ministry of Finance and then the Bank of Ghana have all signed. And we've seen some sort of cuts in terms of expenditure. So we are all hoping that on the side of expenditure, on the fiscal side, things will slow down a bit in terms of the magnitude of the expenditure for us to get that breathing.
But the other concern, energy, for example, the reason we are where we are, doomsday, if you like, is that we don't even have a lot of resources to buy fuel.
Yeah.
Which we need, because then the downturn for the economy will be worse if we are not able to stabilize the energy sector. So as you take, it's already been taken.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how all of this helped to stabilize the economy.
In fact, the reason why ECG is suffering, or the cash waterfall mechanism is not really working the way it's supposed to work, is because of the current economic crisis we're facing, especially on the side of currency depreciation. Because I keep saying this, that ECG collects most or majority of their revenues in cedis, but most of their operations or debt servicing is in dollars. So imagine in total, ECG is able to do all they can and they collect 500 million Ghana cedis as revenue, and they have to send it to the cash waterfall mechanism to share to the sector players. If you convert that to dollars, you possibly it may not be enough to pay the category A, you know, sector players. Mm. So that is where the problem is. The problem is that whenever the city begins to misbehave, our energy sector suffers.
Right.
Because now you need more cities to buy fewer dollars. So if we really want to solve this doomsday situation, the Energy Commission said, you need about $1.4 billion to buy fuel this year.
Mm.
You don't print dollars in this country. Why are you going to?
You have to source
dollars. And we heard the governor saying that the second tranche, $600 million that came in, more than $400 million was used to pay energy sector arrears. So that tells you how important the energy sector is and why, if you don't solve it, the majority of the dollars you gain as a country will be pumped into that sector and maybe just go into paying arrears and not even the actual debt that you're supposed to service for you to get or buy fuel the way you want to get it. Because $1.4 billion is huge money.
It is.
I keep asking myself, at this point in time, where are we going to get that 1.4? Even if you're able to collect more locally or from ECG, just because of the current depreciation of the cedi,
will be difficult to do it.
The denominator always keeps increasing, and the numerator will.
But my final question: do you think government has done all that it could in terms of getting all of these IMF issues out of the way? Do you think government has been proactive?
Well, I think Ghana has done well in terms of the negotiations, especially with our creditors. Just like George said, if you compare us to
Zambia and the other countries,
we have done well. We have done well because of how strategic we've been with all of this. And the fact that we knew, this is our first time we are doing this. It's actually our first time we are having to do this sort of restructuring if you take away HIPIC. But we've done well as a country, and I think that our advisors have done well. But it's still not over yet.
Right.
Because, it's not just about getting the IMF money or getting any form of money that is associated with the program. But it's about how prepared are we to pay the debt in the next 3 years, 4 years. When it's time to pay, will we need another IMF program for us to be able
to pay that kind of money?
Exactly. Because we are postponing our problems, hoping that more revenue will come in for us to pay. Right now, cocoa is not bringing in as much as it's supposed to bring. We've seen people selling their cocoa farms to Galamseyers and all other things. So are we actually in a very good position as a country to pay back in the next 2 or 3 years? Is government really interested in restructuring, or they just want to get the money? That's a very important question.
Yes, that's a very important question that perhaps we'll have to answer one day. Kofi Ajay, thank you very much for coming through to update us on this IMF deal with Ghana. Well, this is your election headquarters. And of course, you're also watching the polls here on Joy News. Now, let me take you to the camp of the NDC, because flag bearer of the NDC, John Dramani Mahama, says the reintroduction of the Free Sanitary Pad initiative will be a priority if successful in staging a comeback to office. It is one of the demands made by teacher unions in a document presented to political parties for inclusion into the NDC's manifesto for the upcoming elections. The policy that was intended in the previous John Mahama administration was largely criticized by opposition parties. In a meeting with teacher unions, the former president revealed intentions to mainstream STEM and TVET education into secondary schools. Mr. Mahama made this pronouncement to overhaul the educational sector of the country when he met with teacher unions.
The provision of free sanitary pads for female learners in both basic and senior high schools was initiated under the SYL NDC administration. If you remember, our opponents now in government mocked us and called it the pad loan. For you, the unions, to have raised this as an issue in the concerns that you have presented to us means that our policy on sanitary pads was well thought through and needs to be looked at again. The NDC policy of infrastructure development will again be pursued vigorously to decongest the large class sizes. Abandoned infrastructure in the basic and senior high schools and TVET schools, including the famous E-blocks, will receive priority attention under a new NDC administration. The need to review and improve upon the free SHS TVET policy is no longer debatable. And Angel just mentioned it. We are happy we are on the same wavelength with regards to that. It is a must that we look at the implementation of free SHS again through stakeholder engagements to address the numerous challenges and strengthen its positives. It is thus not surprising that you have incorporated it into the document that you have presented us, which I call the Teachers' Manifesto. We're going to mainstream TVET and STEM into all secondary schools. We don't believe that STEM and TVET should be standalone in special secondary schools. We must mainstream them through all the secondary schools. And so in this regard, we will revamp the science resource centers in order that clusters of schools can use those centers. Luckily for us, the E-blocks have four laboratories in every E-block. And those laboratories are going to be used for TVET and STEM education. The imperative of the Free SHS Secretariat being supervised by the Education Directorate is our considered view. The Education Service, which is an implementing agency, has the capacity to implement the Free SHS policy. So we do not agree on a standalone Free SHS Secretariat. We think that it must be integrated into the Education Service as an implementing agency. The NDC will therefore integrate the Free SH Secretariat into the Education Service Directorate and not have them exist as separate entities. I announced to the CHAS representatives last week that we would decentralize the school feeding program and return the responsibility for feeding the students to the school.
Well, former Minority Leader, Member of Parliament for Tamale South, Haruna Idrisu, is optimistic the National Democratic Congress will win the 2024 general election. He believes the party's proven track record, where flag bearer John Mahama, will inure to their benefit. He was speaking at a capacity building workshop for NDC party communicators at WA. Rafiq Salam has more.
The former Minority Leader in Parliament, Haruna Idrisu, averred that the National Democratic Congress, NDC, led by former President John Dramani Mahama, is on course to being returned to power based on the following reasons.
Because we stand on the side of morality, we stand strong on the side of truth, and we are proud of our legacy as a party and government in the past, with President John Dramani Mahama as fourth president of the Fourth Republic and our candidate for the 2024 presidential and parliamentary election.
Haruna Idrisu opined that the NDC is poised to capture all 11 parliamentary seats in the Upper West region, starting from the Lambuse constituency, which he said has already fallen to the NDC with the London constituency next on the line. The NDC currently holds 8 out of the 11 parliamentary seats in the Upper West region.
We are determined to capture all the 11 seats in the Upper West region. At least from my briefing and from information available to me, Lambosi is already in the basket. We can add that on. And we are narrowing on to strategy to get Nandom in. And we are determined to win all 11 seats. And then also in the Sisala area, myself have been playing some quiet diplomatic role, reconciling the previous Sisala candidate with the NDC candidate, and they are working together now, as you can see on the ground. And we are quite satisfied with the performance of the NDC in the Upper West region. At least we didn't borrow as recklessly as they have. 600 billion against 120 billion, a debt to GDP, which is unprecedented. So Nana Adudankwa and Dr. Bawumia have only moved Ghana from Ghana beyond aid to Ghana beyond borrowing. You know that they can't borrow again themselves, and they are making it impossible for the country to rely on external borrowing to finance budget and to deal with deficit. And we are aware that President John Dramani Mahama will inherit a problematic economy to manage, and effort will be to stabilize the economy, embark on major constitutional and administrative reforms that strengthen institutions of Ghana, and more importantly, determine what the future of the country would be. The Upper West region, as you all know, is my second home. We are always proud of their sacrifices and contribution to the NDC. And at least it's on the walls that you can see that the NDC will do better and super in the 2024 elections.
The Tamale South legislature then goes after the juggler of Vice President and flag bearer of the New Patriotic Party, Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia, stating that he will suffer to remove the attack of being a habitual lying politician, and also delinking himself from the failures of the MPP government.
As for Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia, he will suffer from a credibility problem as a habitual lying politician. You just make promises, you don't do that. You must have honor when you make promises, and you can't honor them. You apologize to the Ghanaian people, or you hold strong in saying that I take responsibility. He cannot be claiming now to be dissociating himself from the Nana Adudankwa government and their performance or achievement. If he doesn't want to share their failings, he shouldn't share their success. God bless.
Also present was the National Communications Officer of the NDC, Sammy Jemfi, who donated 11 motorbikes to the party on behalf of the 2024 flag bearer of the NDC, John Dramani Mahama, for onward distribution to the 11 communication bureau in the region. Sammy Jemfi chastised the MPP for failing to deliver on promises made to Ghanaians.
The ruling MPP government has flattered to deceive on all their major promises. They have betrayed the trust of Ghanaians, and they have violated their social contract with the people of Ghana. And this is the reason why Ghanaians are all suffering, irrespective of one political affiliation. And so all Ghanaians are united in grief, calling for change in the direction of this country. And who better to give us that change than a man who has been tried and tested? The visionary nation builder, His Excellency John Dramani Mahama, who has a proven track record and the vision that can bring about the transformation and the prosperity we are all yearning for.
Reporting for the news, Rafiq Salam.
So from the NDC, let me take you to the camp of the MPP, because the New Patriotic Party's hold of the Joso constituency is threatened by attempt of a comeback by the former Member of Parliament for the area, Kwabena Owusu-Edeomi. Though the campaign of the former MPP MP, who is going independent, has been quiet, it is fast catching attention in the Joso constituency as far as the by-election is concerned. But the MPP is leaving no stone unturned as the party will join in the constituency campaign. Anaya Ojima put a spotlight on the campaigns in the area and has come to this report.
Aside from the former MP, Kwabena Owusu-Edeomi, the NPP's Kwabena Boateng has to beat four others for the party to retain its seat. Estelle Say of the CPP, LPG's Beatrice Boache, and Joseph Atakra as independent candidates. Ohineba Fridia Ajiman is another independent candidate seeking to break the NPP's monopoly.
The People's Representative Bill, when you go to Parliament, the law over there is People's Representative Bill. But nowadays, I've observed that it's becoming party representative. All those who are electing them into the Parliament go there with their party ideology and other things, not the people. So I've observed all these problems and I decided to come out so that I'll go and represent my people, not any party.
Former MP Kwabena Osu-Edeomi served 3 terms in office as Ejoso MP. In 2016, he won the seat with over 83% votes, setting a record in the constituency elections. Mr. Edeomi says the grounds are fertile for his return as MP.
If you say me no, me think check for anasim we pray nyama yeno. Maybe I'm a kubia no. Jamie man for can say Edeomi. Say one man about praying to be that.
Mr. Edeomi's campaign, though silent, is catching up with the grassroots. Edeomi started these road projects in Ejoso. They can construct the road to Yaokui. We will vote against them. During Edeomi's term, NDC was in power, but he did his part to help us.
Hey, NDC, and you know, as I hope that
big wigs in the NPP are leading the party's candidate in various towns for campaign. Party General Secretary Justin Kodia and organizer Henry Nanabuache have shown support. Minister for Roads Francis Asenso Buache has also been to the constituency. As we speak, government has a candidate on the ground. If you vote an independent candidate, how does he come to me to lobby for roads?
That's another party, MP. Now, parliamentary. I'm going to have my office of a lobby for roads. What to me? It happened.
The NPP candidate, Kwabena Boateng, is already making promises in his campaign.
It's a Kwabena Boateng person, yeah.
I promise to get good roads for the constituency. The chief spoke about nursing training college. It is among my priorities. Considering the size of Ejoso, I think we need one. Though the NDC has refused to participate in the election, the NPP will have to fight an enemy from its fold to retain the seat. For Joy News, Nanaya Ojima reporting.
Remember, the by-election is on Tuesday, 30th April. I will bring you everything that you need. You know, it's a political week. Remember also that the NDC, although they are the running mates, Professor Jenna Nopokwajiman, this week we have a comprehensive coverage for you as well. But let's talk about the law and the sentencing of the former CEO of the microfinance and small loans center, Maslog, has commenced her jail term despite her absence in the country. That's according to private legal practitioner Daniel Cran, who is backing his claim with legal provisions. Senator Temekula Atienu was sentenced in absentia, prompting questions about her whereabouts. Mr. Cran, speaking on the law clarified that under Section 3152 of the Criminal and Other Offences Act, the former CEO's sentencing took effect from the day it was pronounced and it could not be postponed even if she's out of the country. Here is it from the law on Sunday.
Trial in absentia does not violate any of the rules of natural justice if the accused person was put on notice and was given sufficient opportunity to be present at the trial, but the person decides not to be present. That does not violate the rules of natural justice. When somebody is on trial like Sedinam, looking at the gravity and the seriousness of the offenses that were preferred against her, to allow her to travel outside Ghana for medical treatment during the pendency of the suit, to me, was not a proper exercise of discretion by the authorities. In any case, we have hospitals in Ghana that all of us attend. So if somebody is under trial for these serious economic offenses, and you allow the person to go outside the country not under police supervision, or you did not hand the person over to external security for supervision, then you can clearly anticipate that she will not return. Because I am sure that when the case started, her guilt, you know, seemed daring to her. And so it was just a careful and a calculated strategy to run away from the seat of justice. And so I would say that she knew from the beginning that she was not going to return. And so for me, if you ask my view, I would say that the discretion to allow her to travel outside in the first place was not properly exercised.
Meanwhile, the Deputy Attorney General Alfred Chanyebwa said processes are underway to extradite her into the country to serve a sentence.
But what is refreshing is that she will be brought down to face the sentence. No problem at all.
Has the process begun already or are you not going to
begin? We've started the process, and with this judgment, that's going to speed up the process. And you know, Ghana, we have various laws. You can just stay away. But so far as you have laws relating to how you can extradite it from one country to Ghana, in case there's a judgment against like this one, rest assured that should be brought down to face justice.
We know that when it comes to extradition, it deals more with the treaty that you have with the country the person is residing in. Can you throw some more light when it comes to the processes with respect to US and Ghana, where she is?
I may not throw us so much for you, but we have the MLA, Mutual Legal Assistance, US, we have that conflict with them. So very soon, we hear about the results. So just rest assured and keep monitoring the space.
But has the state been not been proactive with this? The judge appeared not happy that you had to wait all this while.
I think the state attorneys are here. In the course of the trial, they made it known to the court that the issue about extradition may be tackled. But the preoccupation was to make sure the matter proceeded to finality. And today, we've come to that stage. And so we're going to take that next step. When it comes to extradition, sometimes you start and have some kind of problems, blocks. The person may choose to appeal all manner of things. But this is the situation where we have final judgment. It's not as if you are being brought here to be tried. Or you can raise all the defense out there that maybe they are going to persecute you or whatever, but it's a judgment. And so that's why I said, you hold on. Very soon, she brought down to Ghana to face justice.
What we say to those who say Mr. Azim has been treated unfairly? I mean, from the traces of money, it's just 20,000 cedis that he received, and that was even a gift.
It matters not. It can be one cedi. Was it properly received? This one is a form of advice and caution to all public office holders, that when it comes to money matters, you must be very, very careful. You may want to say you received only 20,000 Ghana cedis as a gift. Were you supposed to receive that money? What was that money meant for? Were you the one who issued the vouchers, as the court said? So this judgment, I recommend that those of us in public office must procure copies and then read so that we know there is our responsibilities. Because today, you may think that you've not been caught. When you are caught, definitely the law will deal with you as well. Had it today.
In fact, prosecution was, as it were, advocating for maximum punishment in relation to the sentencing. If you look at the sentencing that was handed down by the court, are you satisfied with that?
10 years is reasonable in the circumstance. I'm not going to quarrel about it for now, but we'll take the full judgment and read. But 10 years is something that's reasonable in the circumstance. But if need be, that there's a need for an enhancement, why not? But at the moment, from what we've listened to and what we've learned from the judgment, 10 years is reasonable. And the other accused person also had 5 years cumulatively. So let's see what happens.
The state has been advised to issue for future proceedings. How is the state taking this up?
We are going to follow it up. Any property that the first accused person has within the jurisdiction or outside the jurisdiction should get hold of it. We are going to pursue that property and get the money for the state.
By way of clarity, the court says the judgment should be should take place concurrently. Does that apply to the fines?
No, the fines are separate. And if you listen to the judge, some of them had sentences and a fine. So it means that the fines are in addition to the sentences. So we'll look at it carefully and they will be able to address you on the specifics.
Thank you very much.
So we are following up on this matter. We'll bring you more in subsequent bulletins. But this is The Pulse with me, Elton Brobe. We'll take a short break and return with more. So clearly, education is going to be at the front burner for this year's elections. And this morning also, at the Jubilee House, the Vice President met with the heads of assisted secondary schools. They made some excellent contribution on improving the free senior high school policy and general aspect of education. Now, the Jubilee House is reporting that the Vice President also urged them to explain his vision of leveraging the private sector and enhancement credit system to expand educational infrastructure and support teaching and non-teaching staff to improve the quality of education. And in the coming years, according to the Vice President's office, they will be coming up with a communique that will have all of them sign on to it, which will form the base upon which the Vice President, who is the leader of the MPP in the 2024 election, and the heads of senior secondary work together towards improving the free senior high school program. But let's move away from education, because the quest to finding problem solvers to critical societal challenges from the Ashanti region is on as the committee for the Ashanti 25th anniversary celebration officially launches the Otun First Term Festival. In collaboration with the Ashanti Regional Education Director, the competition will see 50 basic and senior high schools in the region showcase their innovative solution to societal challenges. There's more in this report.
Selected from the over 2,000 basic schools and senior high schools in the Ashanti region, at least 50 schools will be participating in the maiden Otunfo STEM Festival. The academic decathlon would see participating schools showcase various technology-based projects to challenges in sanitation, agriculture, and other sectors of the economy. The competition is in celebration of the Ashanti Henne Silver Jubilee anniversary and in line with the King's initiative to promote education in the region. Jaben Henne, Nana Otuo Serebo II, is the chairperson of the 25th anniversary committee.
I'm a by friend STEM, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics. I'm a student of
STEM has been imperative now. It involves the practical application of the science and technology programs learnt in school. In the past, we Ashantis used to help in farming and others, which was termed as appropriate technology. But the children of today are not exposed to them. So this will offer them the opportunity to apply what they've learnt.
Best performing schools will be selected from 6 zones under the Regional Education District to exhibit their projects at the grand finale of the competition in September 2024. Dr. William Kwame Amankra Appiah is Ashanti Regional Director of Education.
We started with the process. Now we are going to have some selected or some group of SHS and the basic school. So as for the basic schools, we are going to give we are going to divide them into zones. Maybe Sechre, Seizone, Sechre, Adanse, man say at the end of the day we get six, then the best will be selected for the grand finale. And what we want to do with the SS is those who are interested, those who wants to partake in that competition, what we are going to do is we will take the first 10 or first 8, then we add them up to the basic schools, yes. At the end of the day, it's not like just reading, because the 2-4 foundation is a reading festival. Yeah. But we want to go a step further, have people who will be ready for the job market, world market, so that at the end of the day, Ashanti or Ghana, we will benefit.
The regional competition is expected to be replicated every year. For Joy News, my name is Emmanuel Bright-Kweku.
That's show today. For more stories, log on to our website, myjoyonline.com. Some of the stories making rounds, Bahumia running mate delayed, and Mr. Hassan Santé has a lot more on it. The OSP was in court today with the former PPA boss, new charges preferred against him, plus other stories on myjoyonline.com. My name is Elton Brobe. We shall meet with you tomorrow, same time between 3 and 4:30 for another exciting edition of The Pulse. Have a good evening.